Welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com. With over 1,400 shows, we have the answers for you. Enjoy your listening on selfdiscoveryradio.com. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Their Story Matters. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today is Jeffrey Fidel. We're going to be talking about bipolar and all those voices that are in your head. How do we channel them? How do we tune them out? What can we do? Is medicine the way? Is therapy the way? What can we do to quieten those voices, to kind of get that one voice back that we really truly need to be hearing? Jeffrey's taken this journey. He lives with bipolar. He's had those many voices in his head, and he's written a book that shares his journey in there and a lot of perception. And this is actually one thing that I'm going to be reading from the book that I found rather relevant. It's Mind Your Heart. Forget with your mind, forgive with your heart, lead with your heart, and let your mind follow. I'm always saying to people, get out of your head. When we think too much, and there's so much chatter going on there, we're not hearing the other messages. And the other messages come from your soul, heart, and spirit. They all have their own intellect and their own vibration, and if we tune into them as well, we actually get to hear what we are really needing to hear, and our mind quietens down. So how did Jeffrey take the journey to kind of get in control or even eliminate his bipolar? How did he quieten the voices in his head? He refused the medication for bipolar disorder. He kind of almost went into solitude. He endured nearly a full year of intense mental anguish, utilizing mainly the ancient teachings of Lia Xuan Ti Ching. He learned how to connect a voice originating from his heart, the voice within, that teaches him that our true identity is beyond thought, and that we are the universe. In other words, we are one. Dr. Fidel is sharing his ancient teachings to help others discover the answers inside of them. He says, "Be quietening the constant chatter in our heads, we begin to hear the inner voice that originates from our hearts. By surrendering the thoughts of who we are, we can begin to accept the inner voice as our teacher." The inner voice teaches us that we are one. And when we say we are one, folks, we're not talking about the droids and we abstaining from any choices in life. We're talking about connection, that beautiful divine connection. Welcome, Jeffrey, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Chatter in the head, it's not just a bipolar thing, although I know that can be increased with that, but far too many people are up in the head, aren't they, and just don't know how to get out of there.
Yes, well, what we hear when we hear voices in our mind is simply us talking to ourselves without saying it out loud. That is thought, at least that's the verbal thoughts that we hear in our head. Now, we develop this so young as babies that a lot of us aren't aware that it's that simple, that these thoughts that we hear, the voices in our minds, are simply that. We could even demonstrate this when we read books to ourselves. We could actually feel our throats kind of move as we read the words out from the book. We'll feel it in our throat. We're actually saying these words, and then those words get heard in our mind. So that's pretty much verbal thinking in a nutshell, is us talking to ourselves all day without saying it out loud to somebody else. And we used to do that aloud as a child. As children, we have a lot of children have imaginary friends. It was quite normal to talk to ourselves as children. But thought in a nutshell is just that, talking to ourselves.
Yeah. Yes. But they always say we can't have the voices that answer the back, right? That talking to ourselves is really only coming kind of from the thought process, isn't it? It's very often people just don't include the heart in there. It's just this constant chatter, this constant dialogue that's going on in the head.
The problem is that when we're talking to ourselves all day, it becomes habitual. And when we are talking to ourselves, the voice from the heart can't be heard because it can't go through the other chatter in our mind. So only when we're able to still our minds enough that we're not producing our own thoughts, which is us talking to ourselves, can we then hear the voice of consciousness itself that comes through us all human beings, through our hearts. And normally we all have a conscience, and it all is from our heart. I never really listened to that voice for much of my life, and then as I quieted my mind enough, that voice became louder and louder. Until finally, I had enough faith in myself to appoint that actual voice as my teacher. That voice became my teacher for a year. That was the faith I had within myself.
Yeah, I always say, when we stop thinking and start feeling our knowledge, we become more connected. And the heart requires you to feel, doesn't it? It opens up all of those senses of feeling, of touch, of knowing. And so therefore opens up that information so much more, which can quieten the mind, because then the mind is getting the information it needs in the now, and not a whole load of scenario dialogue going on.
Yeah, the main journey inward towards the heart actually involves actually feeling within ourselves. Meaning, subconsciously, over my lifetime, I was protecting myself from feeling certain things, whether that might be something called heartache or different sensations deep within myself. Subconsciously, I was afraid of going to. So the journey inward is kind of allowing myself to re-experience these feelings within myself without having my own mind start interfering and saying like, "Oh, don't go there. You don't want to go back to that place in yourself." Rather sitting in deep meditation and allowing myself to feel once again. And that's kind of the journey inward, is to just let go of whatever I was protecting in myself from feeling. And that's the healing that occurs within myself. The more I allowed myself to experience things in myself, the more healing. And then eventually I got to the very core of who I was. And it's funny because core is Latin for heart, but our heart is the core of where humans are. It's in our heart. And then that's where our consciousness resides. When we know we're not doing something right in life, that conflict within us is the conflict between who we truly are in our heart and what we might know we're doing wrong in our mind. So to kind of get back to the heart is the teaching.
Yeah, as you say, happiness is a state of mind, but inner peace is a state of being. And I always say, if you want world peace, it starts with you by finding your inner peace. And when you find that inner peace, you resonate that peace out to the world, which in turn creates, more peace. Everybody's always looking for an answer elsewhere, aren't they? Where always the answer lies within.
That's the truth. What you said was very much the truth. Pretty much the outside world is the reflection of our inner state of being. We're all our greatest teachers, and a lot of Western science is just that. A lot of people are going to a doctor trying to find an answer outside of themselves, and they keep coming up empty because we have our answers. We kind of know what we need to do, and the discipline is to start doing it rather than trying to have someone else tell us how to do that or give us some kind of pill to get us there. It's all too easy to think that someone else might have our answer, that someone's an expert, so to say. But the only expert is ourselves, because we truly know when we're honest and dishonest to ourselves, that's our conscious.
That very much so, yes. And yes, I mean it's we're looking at a pill, or as they say, a downloadable app, everything that's a quick fix. It's abstaining from participating in your own life. And what we're here for is this beautiful discovery of life, of self-discovery. Who are we? What are we here for? What's our meaningful purpose? Why am I in turmoil? How do I find that inner peace? You didn't come here to know it all and have it all. You came here to take the journey of discovery, to find out what it is you needed to know and needed to do here, and to unravel that pain into that sense of peace, because that is the lesson of being here.
That's exactly right. We all, in the end, walk our own path. No one can walk it for us. It's not possible. We walk that path. And like you said, life becomes the meditation. A lot of people go to meditate, they go sit down, and then after meditation, they go back to their old ways of doing things. The practice is really that. Using life and every life experience as the meditation, and then we come to accept life for what it is. And life always has a lesson to teach us. Even the smallest little things, something can be learned in life. So it's coming to that acceptance and realization that's really important. And then life can be seen in a very different light.
It's, I think, again, with the mind, it becomes so restrictive. It's different if you're living in an open mind that is willing to, to let the soul, heart, and spirit have the conversation as well, and open to possibilities, because we limit ourselves so much as human beings by saying it isn't possible or wanting to box or compartmentalize. But when we actually open up to the fact that we really know nothing, and that there is everything still to learn, then we would actually, I think, be more adventurous on our life's journey instead of more restrictive.
Yes, the mind has a habit of wanting things different than what the reality is. This is the problem with the thinking mind, is it can desire something, and this is where suffering can start to come in, because what is not accepted by our own mind, then we enter a state of habitual thinking or habitual desire for something to be in a state that it cannot be. And this can cause immense suffering because the mind just starts to cycle, and it gets caught almost in a vicious circle of thoughts, of thinking, oh, why can't I do this? Why do I feel that I just can't do anything right? And this circle of thinking pretty much can start to become a reality. That voice can't go away. So it's only by the practice of starting to realize that reality is the way it is, and we must accept it like that, that happiness is not always, to be happy all day is not even a pleasant thing. No one wants to be happy all day. We want to just be natural and live and experience. That's the more natural state. So it's kind of our minds have to start to accept reality for what it is, and that's kind of the meditation. Otherwise, our minds just get caught in this thought cycle, and it can be a really almost a state of torture, because then it just cycles around and around and around.
I mean, a lot of our thoughts that are going on in our head are expectations we think are coming from others, and I think that's a great deal of people's torment is I'm not good enough because society has says I'm not this, I'm not that. My parents are disappointed because I didn't become this. And everything is about what other people want from you, but nobody's giving anybody permission to be what they want for themselves and to take that journey of discovery to decide what that is. A lot of that chatter in there is just other people, isn't it?
That's exactly right. This is taught to us at such an early age, especially in these more developed countries, more modern times, that success is judged by what we do on the outside world, which is a very subconscious attempt that we did things as children pretty much to please our parents or to gain love and acceptance from other people around us. It's a very subconscious thing to want to be loved and accepted that all human beings have. And we learn that young. But what has not been taught as well is for us to love and accept ourselves within ourselves. And that is something that's really not practiced in the West that I had to actually gain from those ancient teachings, is how to be successful inside of ourselves. Because if you look around in society, it's always about being the best athlete or being the best musician or being the most popular. And that's all outside to gain love and approval from others. But how do we go into ourselves and gain that inner fulfillment? And that needs to be brought back. That's very important.
That's what I think. This is what the whole, you know, discourse between you know, what's happening in the Western world is, you know, and this is why the outside stimuli gets people kind of acting in a very unreasonable manner, is there is so much expectation put on people that is unrealistic. You know, nobody having their voice heard, never mind the ability to listen to an inner voice. You know, we've placed such importance on all the wrong things. And if we do really want to create that peace in our own lives and the lives of those around us, we really have to switch everything else off, don't we? All that bombardment, all that expectation, all that dictation from society, switch it all off and just tune out the head altogether and start really turning up the volume on the heart, the soul and the spirit.
Yeah, the modern society is way too focused on the mind, so it's and the intellect and all the stimulus that it's getting from either computers or what have you. So the mind is being developed to the exclusion of the rest of the beingness of who we are. And that imbalance, I think, is causing a lot of problems in modern society, because the mind is only a small component of who we are. We're not just our minds. We might think we are, but we are the beingness that, behind even my thoughts, or behind even when I speak here with you, Sarah, there is a beingness that produces these words. The intellect doesn't just come out of nowhere. The intellect is actually a product of an intelligence behind that.
Yes.
And that intelligence, actually, you know, we as humans, and what I learned from the Tao was that, you know, the naming of things, and this is what the Tao teaches. When we name things, it can separate things into entities when in fact they're all a oneness, and that's what the Tao teaches. So what I learned about myself is, up until last year, I knew myself mainly as Jeffrey Fidel, my religion, I had parents. You know, if you asked me who I was, I would have given you that list back. What's different this year after the inward journey is I now know myself to be woven into existence itself with no separation. Now, this is true of all human beings, whether they know it or not. They're woven into the existence itself. In other words, none of us can survive without everything around us. So we might think that we're separate entities, but I mean, we can't, you know, we take the sun away or the air, and these are more words, but we are the existence itself. So this is kind of like, you know, the realization, everything within me is from the universe around me, the iron in my blood, the air in my lungs, you name it. I might think that I'm separate, but I'm in the system, as is every other human, whether they want to know it or not.
All part of the collective, you know, and this is the thing is that, you're not part of the collective where you're abstaining from who you are, because it's like, I look upon it as this way, in each of the bodies is, you know, trillions of cells, and each one of those cells has a very significant purpose, and when those cells start breaking down, it will break down all of the other cells, and they'll all become sick. So we have to really, really look at our cell structure as being one of those cells. We want to be plump and juicy and healthy and abundant, because that's part of that collectiveness. That's what we bring to the table on that collectiveness. We don't need to bring broken down and disease, because that can contaminate everything else. And also going back to that oneness and knowledge. You know, I feel that we've got so caught up in an academic world, this importance of having, you know, initials and labels around you, that self-importance, which I think is a lot of it is derived from kind of in an insecurity, you know, trying to feed the ego because you haven't listened to the voice inside. But I believe we get our knowledge from knowingness. And in my belief, it goes through the soul, which the divine energy, soul, intellect, is given to the heart in understanding and resonance and compassion and connection, given to the spirit to go into action. Then the mind knows what it needs to know at the time it needs to know it. And it just simplifies your life so much more to live in that knowingness, because it's that beautiful divine information that you're getting. You're dealing in the now with the knowledge you need to know in the now. You're so much more productive because of it, because you're not second guessing. You're not, I need to validate, I need to do this, I need to do that, more questions. You just simply know this is what you need to do right now. And it is that collective source of energy that's giving you that information.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, the heart is the most intelligent part of the body. I don't think actually I said that before, but I will say it now. This is what I learned from my journey inward. My whole life I thought, and most of the West as well, they think that the mind is the smart one. Mm-hmm. But the heart is the smart one. And I could explain that in the mind is the acquired knowledge that I, you know, that's where we collect from society. Our mind knows, you know, when we grow up as babies, mm-hmm. we learn the alphabet and we learn, you know, whatever we learn from whatever society, that kind of depends where we grew up. That's our collections of thoughts and beliefs. But in the heart, and this is the faith of the heart, and this is why my heart served as my teacher. The heart knows the universe. It's the universal intelligence itself. This is why we're all Buddhas within ourselves. If, you know, this was my trip inward, but to use my own heart as my teacher, that was the faith to find my Buddha within, and I write about that. And this is why, you know, in my opinion, the only cure for bipolar, which I have achieved, is to find the true self. Which resides in the heart. Otherwise, so if I think to myself, I am this, I am that, I now know that I am not that. Those are just thoughts in my mind. Rather, I'm the beingness that produces those thoughts. And this is kind of the liberation of being a prisoner of my own mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you point out, the ego heart, you know, once shackled within the core of my being, under the control of my subconscious mind, lay a soulless muscle. In my mind's eye lay four chambers filled with red oozing liquid, connected by opening and closing gates, mechanically pumping away. So when we just are in our mind, that's just really how we perceive the heart, isn't it? When we step into the heart, we know that it is the heart that is the leader, that... that is the conscious itself, that is the guider through everything, that teaches the mind.
That's right. The whole thing was there is that the mind, as I learned in medical school, that's the mind broke my heart into those components. Mm-hmm. Because that's what science does. It creates what's called dualities. And so my mind's conception of the heart is just that it's a four chamber thing with valves and blood in it. But when I take the journey inward and discover my heart, there's actually no more words in there, because then all concepts disappear and it was reconnecting with the feeling in my heart that I subconsciously was protecting my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So the heart, the true heart, is nameless, because only called valves and
okay.
How's that?
You're back again. It's okay.
Oh, okay. So my mind created dualities as such, breaking the heart into scientific components, whereas the trueness of the heart has no name to it. It's just the actual feeling of the essence of the heart itself.
Yeah, essence being the key there. You know, you have another little statement here in your awakening, a fool. It is not foolish to think you can fool yourself. We're very good at fooling ourselves, aren't we? When we just think it, we can talk ourselves into everything, can't we?
Yes, we sure can. But you know what? We can, but always in the back of our minds, every time I told the story, up until that, you know, the year and a half before I started this inward journey, if I told the story to someone and I wasn't being truthful, in the back of my mind, there'd be that little like, you are telling a little bit of a story, or you're exaggerating a little bit. You know, there's always that little bit of
disconnect.
You know what you're doing here. So that's what I mean. We can't fool ourselves. It's not possible.
Yeah, well, we try, though. We desperately try. I like your thing on knowledge. You know, knowledge is knowing. It's unknowable. And kind of in the parallel that to the knowingness is that when we don't need to know it, we don't need to know it. But when we need to know it, that knowledge is there.
Yes, you know, whether we know it or not, our knowledge comes from the essence or the universe itself that we're woven into. So the thing is that the more we think we know, the less room it is for new knowledge to come into us. It's kind of like a cup. If we think we know everything, then our cup stays full and it won't allow the natural intelligence to come back in again. But when we keep emptying our cup, and we know nothing, no matter what we might think we know, we always leave space or room enough for our cup to be filled again. And that's the danger of thinking that we know, because we know not.
Right, exactly. I recently watched this brilliant documentary on the Hubble, that was out in space gathering pictures of other universes. And it's mind-blowing. It's so beautiful. It's so incredible. And it's so humbling, because the universe, you know, we are just one universe within trillions of universes, and they're constantly being born, constantly dying. And, you know, the amount of life forces that are out there that we've yet to discover, you know, is exciting. And yet, as human beings, we think that we are so much more. We can be anything we want to be, but also understand we are also nothing. We are everything and nothing. You know, when people say to me, when you're in your state of peace, what is it? I say, I'm in a state of everything and nothing at the same time. And it's a wonderful place to be. And it's very hard to explain that to people who haven't got there yet. But we have such an extraordinary universe. For us to think that there isn't that interconnection, that divine intelligence, that wonderful cosmic energy there feeding us, you know, for us to think that we are the be-all and the end-all and it all comes from our minds is very, very naive.
Well, the shift that I realized was we're not looking at the universe when we look through the Hubble. We are the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what has to be shown, is because when we take a measurement, even if the Hubble is measuring it, it's also detecting us. We're woven into the existence itself. In other words, human beings might think that they're looking at the universe, but when a human looks at the universe, It's the universe looking at itself through the universe's own eyes, because we were creative of that. So the true universe has no name to it, because only our own minds, which is of the universe, could have named it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So a conceptual universe is just that. No one can know what the universe is, because if the universe looks back on itself, it's no longer the universe, but it's a mental explanation of the universe. So everything is intrinsically unknowable. Mm-hmm. Our minds might think that we know something, but our minds are a part of the existence itself. It's woven into existence. So this is the naming of things, how it can create the illusion that we're somehow separate from the universe, when we are. We are that we peer into. That's us.
Yeah, we came from there. That is our very being. And I love what you write about the past, because of course, as a counselor and a coach, the biggest thing to unravel is somebody's past, because people hold on to pain so much. And you put, the past is the past. Let the past be thy teacher, not thy master. And that's so true. When people hold on to something that's been done to them, a pain, an injustice, a this, a that, it does become their master. It rules them in every way and stops them from moving forward, instead of becoming their teacher and propelling them forward. A very hard one to undo, isn't it?
Yes. This is where the medicine named forgiveness comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because exactly what you said, and this was one of my greatest ways that I healed myself, was being able to forgive within ourselves. It's not asking, because when I grew up as a child, that was taught to me, say you're sorry to the other person for what you've done. So I would go up and I'd say I'm sorry, but I would say I was sorry, but I never really got over it. I just said, okay, I'm sorry. But I'd still be angry inside of myself. So this forgiveness within ourselves is one of the most marvelous medications we can give ourselves, because it might be difficult. It is extremely difficult. That was my hardest thing, I would say, is to forgive things in my life that I didn't think I was going to be able to forgive. But when I finally gained enough strength to irreversibly forgive others and myself for perceived wrongness, this was the greatest liberation that occurred inside of myself. And this was actually the greatest gateway to reconnect with my heart again, was just that. And that was just like what that poem was saying. Use the past, don't let it master you,
mm-hmm.
But rather it has a lesson to teach you. And one of the greatest lessons was that internal forgiveness.
And that, I think, is kind of, as you said, number one, because most of the time, as you said, when you ask to forgive someone else, it's the forgiveness of self. And, again, when you dissect that and you look at, what am I going to forgive myself for? Not living up to somebody else's expectation, because half the time we feel guilty and we feel that we have something that we have to forgive is somebody else's demand of us, right?
I think one of the things I learned was that I saw that I did almost many of the things that I accused other people of doing myself. So when I was finally able to take self-responsibility, it's almost like a lot of times I was angry at someone for something, and then I'd look back on my own life and I'd be like, hey, wait a second, I've done some things that were kind of like that myself. So once I was able to see myself in another, then I was really able to start to say, you know what, I'm going to have to forgive myself as well. I've done plenty wrong myself, whereas before it was more just a blame game, like they did it and I'm innocent.
Yeah, There is a brilliant movie out there called The Inside Out, an animated movie that a couple of fathers did in viewing their own children. And so many therapists and psychologists I know, I said, you've got to see this movie, and they now include it in their practice. Because it's all about embracing our emotions. Our emotions are there to let us know how we feel in the moment. Happy, sad, glad, mad, indifferent. You know, those emotions are there as an indicator. And if you are mad, what are you mad at? Pay attention to it, spend it, move on. If you're sad, why are you sad? Is it just a reflective moment, or is there something to be sad about? And those emotions are all there for a reason. They're an indicator, a gauge. And they do need to be spent and not caught up in. And we as human beings kind of get caught up in the sadness or the anger or the pain and don't seem to be able to move on from it. It's almost like I want to justify the pain and the anger instead of like, okay, I got angry. It's done now. Move on. We have a hard time in moving on, don't we?
I think we do. And I think that it's a subconscious fear of experiencing things within ourselves. I know that I was taught that, or at least I perceived that it wasn't okay to cry. These are certain things that I'm taught to be a man, and I lived up to that until I did the inward journey, where I actually, you know, spent many a days just crying and experiencing sensations within myself that somehow I perceived growing up to be a real man is to not feel anything. And so that's kind of, I got to my breaking point where I had blocked up so much inside of myself that I couldn't really go on anymore. That's really what sparked the journey inward, was really I had so much inside of myself. So even beyond the mind's labeling of things, I feel happy, I feel sad, which are conceptual, the actual ability to feel inside of myself, this was a very novel experience for me. And a lot of Western medicine, this is the great issue, is that instead of allowing the person to go through these feelings, instead we're prescribing drugs that are blocking people from taking any kind of inward journey. Mm-hmm. You know, just take this pill, you'll feel better. Be with other people, be with a support group. This might be okay for a little while, but you see, at least for me, it could never have worked, because I never would have been able to cure myself of something that's deemed incurable. If I went to a bipolar support group, I would just be strengthening my association with this entity called bipolar. And then I'd be talking about problems with other people and identifying outside of myself with their issues, rather than looking inside of myself and healing myself by actually experiencing things inside of myself that I was subconsciously afraid of.
I once went to a fibromyalgia group. I was taken along with a friend, and I do have that. And she said, "Don't say anything, Sarah. Just, you know, listen." And I sat through the whole thing, and you know, people are now getting up to go, and I had to say something. The entire thing was the guy saying to them, "I know it hurts. I know it's hard. I know it's painful." And I thought, you are feeding them, you know, the wrong medicine. And it's, you know, he was feeding the problem, and there was no solution of it. There was no about, yes, it's hard. There's good days and bad days. Focus on the good days. When the bad days comes, give yourself attention, and then, you know, you'll get through it. None of that was happening. And I thought, this is really what we have become, actually, as a society. We love to feed the pain. We love to feed the problem. And is it because people have become attention seekers, and that through their disorder or the disease that they get the attention that they've never had in life? You know, is that why we have so much disease here today? Because we want to be heard, we want to be seen, and we're using this as a tool to do it?
I think that's a perfect example of what the problem is with that support group, is that The mind wants to come in and start putting words. I know it's hard. I know it's this. Even if we sit in isolation, the mind wants to tell us things. To quiet the mind is quite the practice, because once the voices disappear, then we get to surrender into the pure sensation of what is. It's going there with no mind interaction, where the true burning up of whatever problem, that's where the healing can occur, because the mind, it just keeps going in there and trying to label things where it can't be labeled. There's experiences that we could have within ourselves with no mind interaction, and that's kind of like, this is the greatest practice. How do we just feel something? It's almost, I guess, I've never had, I worked in the medical field, but, lots of women, they could do childbirth naturally. Now, they can surrender into that actual childbirth, and then it'll come naturally. But I'm sure if their minds start to interfere and saying that it's painful, I need an epidural, or even if they freeze up enough, there's fear in there, that will cause muscles to start to contract that won't allow something natural to happen. And that's the same thing with anything within us. What if the mind gets fearful, or the mind starts labeling things instead of allowing ourselves to surrender into the pure essence that has no name to it? If we can quiet our minds, we can experience this this wonderful healing that can only occur without the interaction in the mind. And I do this continuously within myself on a daily basis, just to make sure that I am not subconsciously protecting any part within myself. I'm not afraid of going anywhere within my body or feeling anything.
Right.
Within myself.
You've got a little thing he calls self-instructional manual. Please look inside before using. And that is kind of so funny, because the amount of people, it's like, yes, I want to move forward, but I don't know how. I need somebody to give me the manual. And it's the whole thing about life is just looking upon it as adventurous, as wondrous, as exciting, because you don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. And that next moment is there for a reason, as is the next moment. And it's just go and live it. Just participate in your life. Just explore, and just feel and absorb life. It will all come to understanding. But this whole thing of that, I need to live by numbers, or I need a manual to tell me what to do next. I think this is why people get so caught up. As you said, they can't listen inside if they're constantly looking for instruction.
Yeah, I think, a lot of that is, I think you mentioned it before, subconsciously a lot of people want that attention that dates back from childhood. Whether they get it from another doctor or whether they get it from a support group, they want to be heard. They want their problems validated, or they want to be validated in some way. It's a very subconscious motive. A lot of people are habitual doctor seekers, and they don't know it, but a lot of it has to do with that they want to get attention from somebody, even if it's the doctor. So they'll go, a lot of people feign sickness, of course, so that they are just constantly attended to. And that all is a very subconscious need to be validated from the outside. And that's the problem, is that they keep getting it from the outside because they really don't know how to get it from inside of themselves.
Well, I mean, 80% of cancer today is an emotional disease. It's stress, it's, people not knowing how to go inside. I've done numerous shows on people who have had cancer or various types of it. And, yes, they've used some various nutrition and alternative ways of doing things, but most of it was, the healing of themselves from the inside out. And they said when they paid attention to the inside, to the inner voice, even though they may have used some outside nutritions to help them on their journey, it was the nurturing and the caring of themselves that became the healer. And I think that we're seeing so many diseases rampant today. And, some of it is environmental, the foods and the chemicals, etc. But a great deal of it is the emotional turmoil that society seems to be in. And everybody seems to be so stressed. And it's because they're looking for the answers through the head, aren't they? And they're not switching and learning and listening to the heart.
That's correct. I can give you a specific example of how emotional turmoil in my life actually caused me to have severe gastrointestinal bleeding, which I've never had in my life. I went through a period when I was very stressed, and so stressed to the point that I actually was standing in line and I just started bleeding profusely, gastrointestinal bleeding. Someone pointed out that I had blood all over my pants and my leg. And that is the connection between, like you say, when we hold things in, mm-hmm. it affects our entire body. And that can't be denied. Medication a lot of times won't work because that medication might just take care of that particular symptom. But of course, all medications have side effects. A lot of medications has a side effect, and a terrible side effect is how many of them weaken the immune system. Yes. This is why chemotherapy and other drugs that are being used for cancer, even if they take care of the few cells that they might be designed to, it's at the expense of also weakening the entire body's defense system. So this is why when we listen to ads on TV, we hear like 50 side effects. And this is very, people are aware of this. In fact, many oncologists, if you even ask them if they would take their own treatment, many would say no. And that's kind of indicative of where we're at right here.
Yeah, most certainly. We're not putting down doctors or lifesavers and in that moment. And sometimes you may need something for the moment, but you've got to look at it. It's addressing the moment. Now you've got to get to the root of the problem, to the core of the problem. And, nine times out of 10, it will be. It is that emotional turmoil within somebody. And, when people choose to be a participant in their own health, their own well-being, and switch everything else off and tune in, they become their own healers. I used to, at one point in my life, I was on 8 antibiotics a year with, bronchitis and kidney infections. And then one day I found a nutritional company and I pumped myself up full of nutrition and I didn't see my doctor for 8 months. I actually went to see him with my daughter, not myself. And he goes, "I don't see you anymore. What the hell's happened?" And since I don't go to doctors, I've been healthier because I've taken care of my own self. I've listened to my own inner voice. And, now and again, yes, I do need them. There's some things that are a little out of control. But most of the time it is I've got things under control because I know, my body and my soul, my heart is saying, do this. You're being stressed. This is the trigger. Time to heal yourself. And if we have the answers that are within us, don't we? We've just got to tune in and listen to them.
Yes, that's true. I mean, this is when, of course, I'm just starting coming out with this message, but I've cured myself of bipolar disorder type 1, and right now if you look up the literature it says incurable. Mm-hmm. Now I looked inside of myself deep enough that I found this answer. Now granted, and I write about it in my book, I went through states of mind, and that's why if you look at that it says immense mental suffering for a year in solitude. Now, this was true because I knew I could never go back to a doctor. I would be Baker acted. I wanted to kill myself for months, but I just kept going on and kept trusting in the voice within myself. And that's kind of how I was able to get out of these states of mind was the perseverance of trusting in my inner intelligence. And this is something that they won't teach you in medical school, because they actually teach you that if you hear voices inside of yourself, they label that auditory hallucinations.
Yes.
Now, I went through auditory hallucinations for months, and I didn't know what the other voice I was hearing in my head was. So I went through states that are labeled, quote unquote, schizophrenia. So when I get to tell my story finally more mainstream, I will be telling the physicians what that other voice is inside of ourselves, and that it's actually a normal voice to have in ourselves. And I actually still use that voice within me as my teacher. So I was walking around with two voices in my head that were competing with each other for months. I went into a state of madness because, I was just like, what's this other voice? And then only later on was I able to figure out that that was the voice from my heart. And a lot of doctors, myself included, up until last year, I didn't know that I'm supposed to have another voice within me. So it will be an interesting story to see what the medical field will say when I tell them, you are supposed to have another voice, and that's our conscious voice that speaks to us.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they're beginning to waken up to because they're having to realize that that is what's going on. But you've still got some diehards that don't do it. You've got a lovely thing on the ego here, and let's talk about the ego because very often that actually does come into medical practice. Ego to ego. What did one ego say to another? Nothing, since the ego knew the answer before the question was asked. And that is so true of the ego, isn't it, Mr. Know-it-all? It's always, I find, kind of quite fascinating when that ego jumps in because it's a defense mechanism too, isn't it?
Oh, yes. We were taught since we're children that we need to know everything. And this is really stressed in the medical field. Myself, I was a victim of this. Only now I could laugh. When I know my ego is coming in, I could only laugh now. But back when I used to take myself a little more seriously, I really thought that I had all the answers. It was kind of taught to me that to not know something is weakness. So I would do everything I could, even if I didn't know the answer, to prove that I somehow knew the answer. And that was the subconsciousness of it all, is that I couldn't admit I was wrong. And that's the ego protecting itself, because if the ego gets offended, it takes it personally, almost like you got punched in the stomach really hard. So it's the subconscious fight to stay right all the time. And that's
Well, it takes so much energy. It's such a waste of time. I mean, really. But yeah, I mean, I've been there because it was a knowingness culture. I lived in that knowingness and around a lot of academic people. And it was always, well, what are your degrees? And I say, well, God doesn't hang degrees out. He just gives me the knowledge when I need it. And of course, this was a concept that was so beyond, and then it was always prove it, and you actually have this one coming to your senses. Seeing is believing with your eyes. Being is believing with your heart. And I'm a being. I listen to my heart and my soul. It's what guides me. It gets what gives me my knowledge. It is my knowingness. It isn't my intellect. I don't have any. I'm not an unintelligent person, but I'm completely unacademic. And I can't tell you how I got to that answer because it was just given to me. And so it doesn't have to be proven. It just has to be known. And that knowingness then comes from that heart and soul knowing what it is. And you don't need to validate or verify that, do you?
No, the mind can't know. It can only come up with a concept of what something is. The intrinsic knowledge is beyond the mind's comprehension. So this was the great revelation that I had in myself, and I'll say it once again, is that I can't know myself, because If I try to know myself, I'm talking about my mind trying to figure myself out. But my mind could only come up with a concept of who I am, which can't be who I am because the mind is a part of the very being that I am. So the self trying to figure itself out, it could only come up with a concept of the self. And the concept of the self is not truly who the self is. And this sense of
Sorry, you're
the
cutting out
self
again
to
there.
be one with what is. Oh, the intelligence of the heart more than the mind. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, I'm saying this is the intelligence of the heart is the heart doesn't need to know the answer. The mind has to always try and figure it out. And that was the scientist intellectual within myself. That was my whole life, is that the mind is always looking for the answer. Why am I here? It's an existential question that every human being, I think, ponders, like, what is the meaning of all of this? And so the heart kind of just reassures us that you're here because you're part of everything, you're woven into existence, and just accept that and walk the path of life in the moment of now.
Exactly. Walk that path. Just go and live it. You have here the perfect illusion. There is no perfect without imperfect. And I think the perfection of human beings is the fact that we are imperfect. Because what is perfection? It is living in your divine truth and journey. But I think it's because we're so beautifully flawed is what makes our lives so interesting and also makes us inquisitive and investigative and discovering. If we thought we were perfect, what would we do? We'd be stagnant. We wouldn't go anywhere.
I think it's the expectation, I think we touched upon that before, of society's expectations that somehow we need to be perfect to be accepted. And this is really put forth in all the advertisements we see of how everyone looks perfect or has to appear perfect in front of us. But we see time and time again when they go home, then the imperfect, because they can't. My whole life I thought I could live up to this idea of perfection, but it cannot be done. That's just to come to that acceptance that no matter how perfect I thought that I could become, you can't be perfect. There is no perfection. And just to come to that realization takes a lot of pressure off of us because then we know that we won't always do things perfectly. It's not possible. We just have to do our very best, and that's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And who's judging anyway? The universe isn't, right? It's always with us. You've got a lovely little poem here, The Universal Heart of Love. How beautiful is the heart when it's open and free to sing its universal song of truth, bathed in sea of sound and air swirling around its life-giving force, in sync with the world around, giving and receiving all the love it has always known. That is that universal love, isn't it?
Yes, that's actually every human being has that in their heart. That's kind of like the original, like when we're babies and the innocence that we have before the world around us toughens us up. We can all connect to that very center of ourselves where that. This is how we know ourselves to all be the same. We could all relate to another human being, and that is just the true nature of the human really resides in that heart space where there's just that. This is all humans are that. No matter how tough someone might be on the outside, deep inside is that innocence and love. But it's up to that person whether they want to connect with it or not.
It comes down to choice, doesn't it? We can choose which way we're going to go. Be trapped in a prisoner of our mind, forever asking the question and never receiving the answer. Or we can be open and choose to listen to our heart, that's always going to take us down a journey. That doesn't mean that that journey is always going to be roses and, you know, rose-colored glasses. It gives us our ups and downs, but the more we trust it and the more we journey it, the more we trust our heart, the more we know how to react to those downs and how to get back up again, because that's part of that life's lesson.
Yes, that's our teacher inside. Our teacher inside, our greatest teacher. When we're ready to hear our teacher, we can start listening to our heart. And the more we listen to that inner voice, the more true we become who we truly are. That's really where we reside. We're taught to be tough, and I was tough, but where was I really tough? I was tough in my thoughts and in my head that I was such a tough guy. The journey in was to release that story that I told myself of how tough I am and reconnect, you know, with the innocence inside of me. And that took more strength than any tough thought that I ever created in my mind, was to really face myself on the inside. We might think that we're so tough standing up to someone or yelling at them, but that's not being tough. That's actually just projecting out our own anger inside at somebody else.
Yes.
The real strength is to go into ourselves and find and face ourselves, and then to start connecting with that teacher that we all have inside of ourselves. And that's the toughness, you know? That's where I now saw my greatest strength. It's easy to yell at somebody else, but it takes real strength to look into ourselves and find our answers inside.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I suffer from depression and anxiety, and every now and again the wave comes over me and I go, okay, all right, there for a reason. What's the reason? You know, look at it. And then it's those deep breaths of focusing, listening to the heart, because the heart and the soul always say, you know, it's okay, don't give in to it. It's just there as a reminder, or it's there to, for you to take care of yourself, there to listen to something that maybe you're ignoring. So, you know, when these things come back to visit us, it isn't a kind of, oh, I'm back there again. No, it's just tapping you on the shoulder that maybe you need a nudge to the left or the right, or, you know, everything is for a reason, but it's to dissect it so much. It's to feel and understand it and then move on.
Yes. A lot of modern science is trying to break it into some kind of science of why depression is this, or why, you know, because it's low dopamine, or all these theories. Whereas it is something, just like you said, it's a lot more ancient to what it is to be a being, and that is just, it is a signal inside of ourselves. Go to this place and allow yourself to heal. It's the same thing as that if we're jogging and our hip starts to get sore. You know, stop jogging. That's like the natural intelligence inside of ourselves. We don't need to break it into a thousand different components of, you know, the carbon molecule went this way. And because this is, it begins to get a little bit maddening after a while, you know, that we can figure out everything. And put it into a little compartment of labels and science. It's a lot more simple than we are trying, you know. We got to start putting down that that science toolbox and just start listening to the natural intelligence.
Right. And, you know, it's, you know, let's not as disregard things of like, you know, good nutrition and good rest and good exercise. That's all part of that common sense package. You know, it's... You know,
totally.
You know, and it's about, you know, get the rest that you need. You know, if you're feeling stressed, go and do something about it. Make sure you're eating properly so that it fuels your body. This isn't abstaining from looking at those things, because we've still got this human vessel. And this vessel needs to be given, you know, pure fuel. And it needs to be rested and it needs to be exercised if it's going to serve the rest of us. So it's a partnership that you're having there. You know, your beautiful divine spiritual self is having a partnership with your body as one, as you are one with the universe. And again, it's not becoming the droid and abstaining from anything. It's becoming abundant within yourself so that you're contributing to the collective. So it's just stepping into our oneness, isn't it? And knowing that we are, as a one individual, part of that one collective, and we are all from source, we are all the same. But we've just been given these different identities to have different experiences that we can bring back to the collective. It's like bringing a spice or, something to the beautiful table, the feast. If it was all the same, it would be boring. But each one of us brings our own little ingredient, which makes it so much more exciting.
Yes, this is true. Like you said, it is that simple. All we have to do is rest, breathe good air, drink a lot of water, eat properly. We have all this inside of ourselves. How many people are truly listening to themselves? We don't have to be perfect in listening to ourselves, but it is much of it is that simple. So to want to go out and eat poorly and then to think somehow we're going to feel well, is kind of it's crazy, because what we want is in the society is to go out, be able to eat whatever we want, and then pop a pill and then get away with that. And it just doesn't work like that. It catches up to us. Even the amount of caffeine that we consume, we don't allow our bodies to rest. We just keep consuming more and more caffeine, and eventually we become dependent on caffeine, and we're denying our body of rest, which is detrimental in and of itself, and things start to break down.
Right, exactly. So it is a partnership with yourself. You're a whole human being, and you have to be in balance and in sync with the whole of you. The universe didn't come bring you down here just as a speck, just to have a spiritual experience. It gave you a body to have a full whole experience. So, understand, if you really want to enjoy that experience to the maximum, you've got to look after yourself from the inside out, and that is in every aspect. So, my dear, how do people get hold of you? The book and book you for speaking engagements, etc.
The best way is to go to my website, which is www.jeffreyfidelmd.com. That's Jeffrey, F like in Frank, IDEL, MD.com. And on there is the link to the book, and also other ways to contact me should people wish to have a speaking engagement. I'm definitely more than willing to share some of my personal experiences and try and help others to connect with this inside of ourselves that we all have, that I think is really the key to us finding our answer of what we really need for ourselves.
Well, and everything is here on the posting, folks. A direct link to the book and everything else, and his Facebook and Twitter and everything else, and the voices within of bipolar and how to change the channel. And it's everything is achievable, everything is curable, everything it can be overcome. It's what you decide to do and what are you going to feed. And if you start listening to your heart, the soul and the spirit, and start paying attention to those voices within, not the head, you will actually realize that all the answers are there. That knowing what you need to do is all there. And simplify your life. Don't stop trying to kind of put everything in such intellectualism to prove a point. It's really quite simple in the end. It's really quite simple. Just listen in and you'll know what to do. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for being with us today.
Thank you, Sarah. It's been a pleasure.
And remember, folks, bipolar, right? He got over bipolar through this process. That means you can too. Do you go cold turkey with your meds? No, you can wean it off slowly. But you've got to give your inner voice a chance. Because if you don't, there'll be no pill that will be able to help you. You can help yourself by tuning in. Until next time, folks.